Stay tuned now for Edward R. Murrow with the news, presented by Hams, the beer refreshing. Hams is the beer that looks refreshing, dancing gold in your glass, tastes refreshing, crisp and clean cut with smoothness aged in. Yes, Hams is the beer that captures for you the refreshing enchantment of the land it comes from, the land of sky blue waters. When you're dry and thirsty, ask for Hams. H-A-M-M-S. Hams, refreshingly yours from the land of sky blue waters. Edward R. Murrow is now in Europe for an on-the-spot survey of the leading capitals and interviews with the men and women who make the news. In a few minutes, we will hear Mr. Murrow's report. But first, here's Bill Shadell with a summary of the news.
Good evening. The Conservatives have won the national election in Britain. For a report on the results to the moment and what they may mean, here is Edward R. Murrow recording from London.
This is London. A new government is now being formed in Britain. Mr. Attlee has gone to Buckingham Palace to see the King and tender his resignation. Mr. Winston Churchill subsequently visited the King and has been asked to form a new government. The Conservative Party has, at the moment, a majority of 17 in the House of Commons. There are still 5 constituencies to report. This majority is large enough to conduct the affairs of government. It is large enough to denationalize the steel industry and return it to private ownership. But it is not large enough to undertake bold, vigorous, or unpopular legislation. In terms of the popular vote, it is in fact a minority government, for the Labour Party polled about 200,000 more votes than the Conservatives. The parliamentary seats that changed hands were marginal ones, where the shift of a few hundred votes, in many cases Liberal votes, determined the outcome. The Conservatives' jubilation tonight is most restrained, for they will lead a very precarious existence, threatened always by defeat in the House of Commons and with the loss of by-elections when one of their members dies or resigns. The Conservatives have no clearer mandate, no more freedom of action or maneuver than the Labour government had for the last 18 months. This will induce caution and compromise in both domestic and foreign affairs. For months, Mr. Churchill belabored Mr. Attlee's government as a minority government. He will now be subjected to that same charge. It is probable that Mr. Churchill will attempt to remain aloof from the day-to-day conduct of political warfare in the House of Commons, coming down to speak only upon occasions of great importance. Mr. Anthony Eden will probably act as leader of the House of Commons in addition to his duties as Foreign Secretary. The toughest job in this new Conservative government will be that of Minister of Labor, for the depth and degree of class bitterness produced by these last 2 elections will make it particularly difficult for a Conservative government to deal with organized labor in Britain. What happened in this 3-week political campaign was substantially this. Neither the issues nor the personalities had changed. Therefore, the country divided almost as it did last time, giving the Conservatives just about the margin that Labor had. There was not a single upset, and there was no significant swing in opinion or allegiance. That was because people were voting their apprehensions of the future and their memories of the past. Memories of unemployment, the dole, red lines, and war. The division in this country is now so deep that one party will not listen to or believe what the other party says. The really somber implications of this election stem from the fact that there was no clear-cut mandate. Britain faces an economic crisis that is, I think, without parallel in its history. The country is spending more than it is taking in. It faces increasing competition from Germany and in the near future from Japan. This situation, this impending economic crisis, was not talked about in the campaign, for that's not the way to win votes. The result is that public opinion in this debate was not prepared for the hard decisions that must be made. This country cannot continue its social services and its rearmament program without looking economic and financial collapse squarely in the face. The alternative is a further reduction in a standard of living that has for the last 12 years been austere and depressing. And now, the conservative majority is not sufficient to undertake the drastic and unpleasant remedies the situation demands. Under existing conditions, there is no possibility of a compromise, of a coalition government. The Labour Party would divide and destroy itself if its leaders agreed to serve under Mr. Churchill under any conditions short of actual war. The Labour Party are confident that in the course of a year or so, perhaps less, they can drive the Conservatives from power. But a different division of the country would require new issues and new men. And it is here that the victory of Aniron Bevan and his followers is significant. They bolted the Labour Party on the grounds that it was spending too much for guns, too little for butter, and was too subservient to America. And they were all re-elected, many with increased majorities. If, after a severe economic and financial crisis during the coming winter, which the conservative government is not strong enough to handle, the people were asked to vote on guns or butter, they might choose butter. They haven't had much of it for the last decade. Mr. Churchill will certainly make a bid for some kind of settlement with the Soviet Union. British foreign policy will be more closely geared to that of the United States, and it will be in more skilled and experienced hands. But foreign policy, however skillfully directed, must reflect domestic strength and unity or discord. And the British government, although it has changed, must continue to operate with a knife-edged majority. Do not expect dramatic or heroic gestures in either the domestic or foreign field from this government. The margin is too narrow for that. I doubt that any prime minister, including Mr. Churchill in 1940, has ever accepted the seals of office beset by more formidable and awesome problems of state. But he has done it with a combination of grimness and gaiety, which in days past endeared him to millions who voted both for and against him yesterday. This is Ed Morrow recording from London. Now back to Bill Shadell.
A few hours ago, President Truman sent congratulations to Winston Churchill on the Conservative Party victory. The text of the message was not made public at the White House. There has been little comment from administration officials in Washington on the British elections. Unnamed officials predict closer Anglo-American relations as a result of the Conservative victory, but they concede that some sharp differences are bound to develop. First of these, perhaps, over a meeting with Premier Stalin, which Churchill has hinted at and which the president has discouraged, except if the meeting could be held in Washington. There is the expectation that Churchill will be coming here for personal talks early next year. The careful restraint exercised by administration officials today is in contrast to the enthusiasm displayed among Republican leaders. National GOP Chairman Guy Gabrielson says the results reflect a worldwide trend away from socialism, which will produce a Republican victory in 1952. The Democratic National Committee said in a statement, "The issues in the British election were not those which will be debated in this country in 1952. In the capital of Iran today, probably the sharpest reaction. As soon as the results became known, an order was issued changing the name of Churchill Avenue to Mossadegh Avenue. Mobs of students smashed the street signs shouting, "Down with Churchill." Egypt remained calm but tense today, showing little direct reaction to the elections. Pamphlets were being circulated by Egyptians calling for a boycott in labor and food of the British-held canal zone. The Egyptian government declared a ban on British warships in the canal. The foreign minister sketched a policy of non-cooperation with Britain, the United States, and France. Ceasefire negotiations scheduled for tonight in Korea are expected to get down to the bargaining stage on proposals now laid down by both sides for an armistice line. The communists appear to have abandoned hopes of making it the 38th parallel. Two more Red fighter planes have been shot down in continuing air battles involving 120 communist jets, 68 American Sabre jets. All American planes are reported safe. Ground action was limited to smaller skirmishes and patrols. The U.S. ambassador to Russia, Admiral Kirk, said today that our relations with Soviet Russia show signs of turning in our favor. The ambassador had a half-hour meeting with Mr. Truman at the White House.
After weeks of secret negotiations, U.S. officials announced agreement on terms of military assistance to Yugoslavia, which will include modern American weapons. In Paris, Air Force Secretary Thomas Finletter says the construction of Allied bases is behind schedule and must be stepped up. But an encouraging word from Army Chief of Staff General Collins. After a visit in Indonesia, he says there's no question but what the communist menace there has been halted. In Washington, President Truman tonight called upon striking longshoremen at eastern ports to return to work at once, declaring that the work stoppage has virtually paralyzed movement of equipment and materiel vitally needed in our national defense. The president issued his statement after federal mediators had reported all mediation efforts have been exhausted. The New York Board of Trade had appealed to the president earlier today to invoke the Taft-Hartley Act in the Wildcat strike. The cabinet studied the question this morning, but no decision was reported. 6,000 workers along the Delaware River waterfront have declared a half holiday tomorrow to vote on joining the strike. About half the stevedores already are idle in Philadelphia. Senators Murray of Montana and O'Malley of Wyoming today called for a White House conference to head off a threatened railroad strike and return of the roads to private operation. The Army technically has been operating the carriers. Picket lines were thrown around the entire Oak Ridge, Tennessee atomic production and research area today in a strike of plumbers and steam fitters. In another case today, President Truman said that unions and management owe it to the American people to keep production going, to make every effort to reach a settlement through collective bargaining, and, that failing, to cooperate with their government in maintaining production while their dispute is being considered by the Wage Stabilization Board. This is Bill Shaddell. Mr. Murrow will be back in a moment with the word for today.
If it's your turn to have the crowd in some evening this weekend and you haven't decided on the refreshments, how about this popular combination? Fix a heaping big bowl of hot salted popcorn, then set out plenty of icy cold Hams beer for a just right extra refreshing touch. Make sure it's Hams now, the one beer that belongs in any friendly gathering of folks who know and appreciate truly fine beer. Serving Hams marks you as a particular host, for Hams is the beer that captures for you a refreshing bit of the enchanted land where it's brewed, the land of sky blue waters. Hams alone has that crisp, clean-cut taste with smoothness aged in, a superb, extra refreshing flavor you and your guests will never forget. Whenever you entertain, make your gathering more complete with Hams Beer, the ambassador of refreshment. Ask for Hams wherever fine beer is sold. Refreshingly yours from the land of sky blue waters. And now, Ed, what's the word for today?
A British prime minister of another day, named Benjamin Disraeli, said in the autumn of his life, but at the peak of his glory, "Power, it has come to me too late. There were days when on waking, I felt I could move dynasties and government, but that has passed away. Mr. Winston Churchill does not feel that way. He thinks he can do it. Good night and good luck."
Edward R. Murrow and the News is presented each night, Monday through Friday, by the Ham Brewing Company of St. Paul, Minnesota. When you do your weekend shopping tomorrow, remember to order a good supply of Hams. Order this extra refreshing beer in the handy, easy-to-carry six-pack carton or by the case. Just ask for Hams. It's America's most refreshing beer from the land of sky-blue waters. Listen to Murrow on Monday. Fahey Flynn speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.